You're listening to Send This to Your CEO, the B2B Tech Marketing Podcast, presented by 4B Marketing. Explore the world of B2B tech marketing with industry insiders and experts. Our episodes are packed with the latest insights, strategies, and trends to help you stay ahead in this ever-evolving industry. Whether you want to sharpen your marketing skills or keep up with tech developments, we have everything you need right here.
Thanks for joining us for 4B's Office Hours Live. I'm Tyler Jacobson, joined by our VP of Creative, Matt Gillespie, and our Director of Content, Aaron Rosenbluth. And today we're going to be talking about trends in marketing, social media, and web. And I'm going to kick us off with a trend that I think a lot of us are seeing right now, which is the economy. Some nervousness around that and some belt tightening. Aaron, I know you had an interesting thought around this, so I wanted to give you an opportunity to share it.
Yeah, absolutely. So when we were discussing all this earlier, and I thought about this, and we've talked about this before, I was thinking of the sort of backward mentality that a lot of these brands and folks have around cutting budget when we're in situations like we are today, financially, economically in the country. So everyone's pausing, pulling back, waiting, playing this waiting and seeing game, what's going to happen. And while they're doing that, they're shrinking and not developing awareness, not marketing themselves, which ultimately creates a massive opportunity for any of those brands, businesses, competitors to come in and just dominate. And like, if you're willing to actually spend right now, as frightening as that might be, the ultimate outcome could be greater than you ever imagined because your competitors are disappearing. So yeah, first thing that comes to mind.
Yeah. And I think that is, I think that's really, observant. As that volume gets turned down on the awareness channel, I don't know a single CEO who's like, let's just stop spending money. What they want is they want sales. And so I can see a lot, you know, I mean, it's going to turn into a survival game here a bit, or survival mentality. And so I think you're going to see a lot of aggressive action happening at the conversion stage of the buying journey. So if it's a digital product, more than likely you're going to see a lot of people investing in paid search and trying to show up at that very last moment, you know, just get me leads, get me sales, get me whatever you can. So imagine it's going to get a bit cutthroat there. But you know my thinking around this. Those people who invest at the awareness stage, they're going to win at the conversion stage. They've already built up that brand trust and that brand visibility.
Totally agree. And they won't look desperate. I mean, I wonder about, you know, kind of when it goes into this like hardcore sort of only at the point of conversion sales style of marketing. It to me feels like it could easily lend itself to feeling completely desperate. And I think that people absorb that whether they realize it or not on the other side, or just a lack of creativity in the messaging or whatever it is that they're putting out there. You know, I don't think, because you're not creating from a place of
abundance.
Yeah.
Basically. Yeah. And that was my thinking. You know, when you're not operating in a place of abundance, it's going to feel very panicky. Now, I was going to ask you, do you ever go in there and say, well, that company looks desperate, I'm not going to use them? I never consciously think that.
No.
Yeah. I think you might have had a point there when you said that, you know, knowingly or unknowingly, there's all sorts of signals that inform our buying decisions, and we aren't aware of many of them.
That's true. So, you're actually bringing up a good point. Like us as marketers, we have to, and I have to do this all the time. I have to remind myself to do this all the time. To subtract myself from the scenario as much as possible. Because while I might be looking at somebody's ad or whatever it is and thinking about it from this highly critical lens of desperation or not, whatever it is, the average person receiving that message isn't looking at it through that lens. They're not evaluating the quality of the copywriting or the visuals or whatever. I mean, I'm sure some do, but most do not. They're just seeing it.
Yep. 100%.
It is very hard to separate yourself out and look through a different lens, you know, being so close to, you know, working at an agency as a marketer, as a creative. Yeah. It's really hard to separate that out and look through a different lens, look through a traditional consumer lens.
It's so challenging. I think that's one of the biggest, at least for myself, it's one of the most challenging things that I do, that we do, I like thinking not as myself, but as my customer, you know?
Well, and I don't even think that it's restricted to agencies forever, for whatever it's worth. I think it actually is, as business owners, we have so much more at stake, right? And so we start thinking, oh, well, we're going to appear desperate. And I'm just going to use that as an example.
Yeah.
You're not the customer. You're the seller. Customer's not really thinking about any of that.
No, right? Not at all.
So the stakes are much lower for them.
The customer is not thinking about you for the most part in that moment. You know, they're thinking about whatever
their needs,
the good bathroom, you know, what are they going to eat for dinner that night, you know, or whatever problem they're attempting to solve in that moment. Maybe it does involve what you do, but maybe it doesn't. Yeah.
All right. Matt, what do you got for us as far as trends?
Yeah, so I don't know if we can call this one a trend. I think there's speculation that maybe it's a trend, but the opposite of companies tightening their belts are, you know, these big brands we've seen launching extensive rebrands that have just been complete flops, you know, in the public eye, on social, a lot of backlash around some of these brands. I'm sure everybody's familiar with the Cracker Barrel one. That's one of the more recent ones. Jaguar's in there. We were recently talking about the city of Austin. We have a team member who works out of Austin, and she shared it in a team meeting. The city of Austin just did a major rebrand executed by Pentagram, you know,
legendary,
arguably the best in the industry when it comes to branding. Outside looking in, though, everyone was critical. It could be better. Why doesn't it look like this? Why doesn't it look like that? This doesn't represent Texas. So, you know, there's a lot of speculation, maybe some conspiracies around, is this intentional? So I don't know if it's a trend, but are brands intentionally doing something so drastic just to spark that conversation and put the spotlight on themselves?
I personally liked the Jaguar rebrand. I didn't understand why everybody was so frustrated with it, but that question of intentionality, just as a marketer and not a designer and not a PR person, my thinking is, yes, it might get you good attention, but I don't think we're in a space anymore where all press is good press. Mm-hmm. I think negative press can really follow you around. We know that it can hurt sales in some cases. I mean, look at American Eagle and Sydney Sweeney. Their sales did not increase. In fact, they went down as a result of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so I can't imagine a company putting themselves in that kind of peril.
In intentional danger.
I had
the same thought because I was looking at this Cracker Barrel scenario and I thought the same thing of Matt. I was like, this looks intentional in some ways. But then I started thinking to myself, would Cracker Barrel certainly, would they ever go be so ballsy to intentionally do something that is that risky that could tank profits to ultimately recover and become more like save themselves, be the hero at the end of the day? I don't know.
I think that got Cracker Barrel more press than they've had in.
They were talked about like for better or worse. I'm like a morning news junkie. Like we watch the Today Show. We watch all the cheese.
It's for worse.
It is for worse. Right now, but so. But like when I'm seeing something in my LinkedIn feed that's just being talked about by marketers, and then suddenly I'm like watching the morning news with coffee and it has reached, you know, like the general public, like Cracker Barrel. I mean, it got everywhere. And then I start thinking, I'm like, it's wild to me when we have a moment where like the average person is thinking about a brand's identity. And Tyler, looks like you had something.
Well, I'm thinking about the Sydney Sweeney thing with American Eagle again, and then I'm also thinking about the which I don't know which Kardashian it was with Pepsi, you know, handing the Pepsi during the Black Lives Matter protests.
And
okay, so I know that when Nike did their Kaepernick campaign, they put so much market research into it. And they really were very intentional about it. And they made sure that it was going to, I mean, I think they already knew the reaction before they ever released it. And that helped, that paid off for them, right? Because it was controversial, but it also increased sales. And then you have to look at some of these things and you're like, listen, you could walk into literally any Cracker Barrel in America and just be like, what do you think? You know, did they not do market research behind that?
I would think that they had to have. And that was one thing that came up just doing a little digging on the City of Austin one. You know, surely, especially once I heard Pentagram, I mean, they followed their blueprint for success with that rebrand. And come to find out, yes, there were focus groups. There were iterations that felt more Texas, and focus groups had a negative response to that. They wanted something that felt different, that didn't feel red, white, and blue, that felt more organic, you know, not traditional Texas Lone Star branding. So they did do the work, but, you know, it still sparked a lot of negativity.
So does that then show, like, you can put your best effort toward anything related to this and do all of the research, focus groups, spend the time and the money and effort to validate what you think is going to be a good idea, and then still put it out there into the world and find out that you were wrong and that the people that you were, you know, your focus group was wrong. Like, it can still happen. It's just that it's the world we live in, and it's the risk that I suppose you have to take.
There's probably some timing around that. I think that's a fair enough guess. And there's always going to be risk with it, right? And look at Uber, right? Even before all of this, Uber rebranded, and they cost them so much money to have to go back to the previous brand because it was so poorly received. Mm. You know, rebranding is very risky.
Yeah, well, Cracker Barrel, I mean, they're doing the same. But at the same time, in the end, like, is it going to work out in favor for Cracker? Because here's what I'm hearing about now is, like this didn't just stop at the logo. It went, they were remodeling locations. They halted. Right. They're like, nope, we are not, we've heard you. We're not doing this. We're keeping this the same. And now I'm hearing that Gen Z, like, people who have never perhaps heard of or have any interest in Cracker Barrel are suddenly like, who is Cracker Barrel? What is this? Do I need to go check out this restaurant and see this, like, you know, dining room experience that everyone's talking about and, like, dying on a hill about not changing? I guess we don't really know yet. But it's a really interesting thing to consider, like, how rebrands happen, when they're appropriate, when they are, and perhaps weird sort of markety little sneaky things going on.
I don't want to draw this conversation out too much, but yeah. It was mentioned among the three of us is that sometimes you get, you know, to the 10-yard line, and then corporate overseers come in and say, I want something, you know, this is okay, but, and then, you know, they have the final say.
Right. You know, the teeth can be ripped out of anything. It goes through multiple iterations, as we talked about. So who knows where any of these things actually started.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Aaron, what do you got?
Okay. So let's see. I got my little list here. So I had I wanted to talk about the social media trend that we're seeing of unhinged content, which, you know, I use this example probably way too much, but it is one of the most unhinged feeds I think I've ever seen. Nutter Butter, you guys know that I'm missing. Nutter Butter. But you're seeing it also with, there are so many other brands that are trying to do the same thing. It's, you know, going out there, like, entirely off-brand. You've heard me make the comparison between, like, visiting and going back to Nutter Butter. They're not the only ones doing this, for the record. But their website versus what you see on social media, which is completely different. Like, it doesn't look like the same company at all. And then, you know, this bizarre world that's sort of dystopian that they're creating. But you're seeing a lot of companies go out here with this social media approach that's like everything unhinged. And I'm not convinced that it always makes sense. You know, I think that it's easy to get it totally wrong and be ignored, or just look stupid and like you're chasing something. So
I say you're going to be ignored if you don't do it. That's definitely you're going to be ignored. And the thing that I think a lot of companies miss in social media is that this is an attention economy.
Yes.
That is all that is on the other side. And so if you're unwilling to do things to get you attention, then you're not going to win in that space.
Okay. So yeah, I agree with you. For me, then how it comes down to authenticity. So not looking like something that's genuinely bizarre, but has some sort of like, there is an underlying, it's not weird simply for the sake of being weird. Maybe it is, but it doesn't appear that way. It looks like there's some sort of depth to it. Could be completely wrong. But I mean, some of this, I'm like, I think for me, I'm such a stickler about authenticity. So I try to think of like, how do you do that authentically? You know?
I mean, when it comes to being unhinged, is there authenticity in it, or is it just unhinged, you know?
Just get weird.
Yeah, and I think that's it's risky for a brand to do that, but that risk pays off. Again, if you are trying to blend in with and be safe, you're going to be ignored in social.
Yeah, you're not going to have your spider moment. Brita, Wida, that's the other one I was like blanking on. Brita has turned their feed into this bizarre, cutesy reality that's also experiencing a lot of attention. And
they have a theme song. Make myself a note to check that out.
Check it out. SJ and I have been talking about it a lot. They Bwida, BWI. It's like this song. They cut refer instead of Brita. It's Bwida.
The water filter, right?
The water filter. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. So I think some of this is coming from these like seemingly boring things, like a cookie, you know, or a water filter for your, you know, a thing in your refrigerator, whatever it is. And like taking these like seemingly boring things and then just turning them completely on their head in a way that makes people go cognitive dissonance. Like,
And I think it goes back to that. You have to ask that question. Why are people watching?
Why?
And yes. If you can't answer that, then you're not doing it right, frankly.
I totally agree. And I think some of the people who are doing this successfully, they give people a reason to continue to watch. They're in the long term, it's trying to figure it out. I think where people are doing it wrong is where they like, let's just be weird, and then there's nothing to carry it through. Like there's no narrative arc or nothing underlying, like create a world or, you know? Yeah.
It feels intentional. Nutter Butter is as wild and out there and eccentric as it is. It feels intentional. I haven't quite figured it out yet, but there's enough there that, you know, it makes you want to unpack it and try to understand it.
And even if it does. And then if you don't, it's just so weird and kind of jarring that you're like, what is this now?
Right.
Well, this actually leads in, because we're coming up against some time, but this leads perfectly into the next thing I wanted to discuss. So I'm thinking about this unhinged content, boldness, edginess, which is a word that is loaded for us. What do you mean when you say you want something edgy? But I'm thinking about what I'm now terming the liquid deathism. It kind of plays into this, the whole shiny object of liquid death. And now what I'm calling liquid deathism, which is like everybody trying to go out and do something. Not everybody, actually. But people, I mean, most conversations in marketing right now seem to somehow go back to like what liquid death is doing. And I think that does play into this unhinged idea. So striving, you know, but a lot of people aren't doing it that well. It's kind of coming back to like not having a real foundation for your unhinged content. You're seeing all these people attempt to do this sort of what they consider bold or edgy, but I think it's not always landing. You know, I don't know. Is authenticity? I'm kind of stuck on this idea right now, as you guys can hear.
My question around that is, I don't really see other brands trying to do it. I see a lot of conversation around it, but you have to execute, and you have to have the freedom as social media teams to execute.
That's the thing, the autonomy. And we know that that's something I know from even Matt and I from seeing and hearing Andy Pearson live in Boulder a year or two ago, that those guys have the autonomy and the resources now to be able to go run the craziest ideas like almost immediately.
I think that's it. They got a team of creatives.
Yeah.
They know how to do video production. They can do everything in-house. It's relatively simple for them to execute that level of content.
Yeah.
I had so many things I wanted to talk about. I'm not going to get to any of them, but this actually leads into something, a point I just had my response already prepared for this thing. Let's talk about AI content creation.
Oh, all right. Yeah. Let's go there.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it's something that we get asked. Everybody's hearing about AI image generators. I mean, we've been experimenting with them for years now. It's hard to believe that it's been years, and it's quite incredible to see how far it's come and how near photorealistic. I mean, we're far past the days of Midjourney images with hands with seven fingers, and you know,
it's spaghetti. Yeah.
It's pretty wild, and it gives us a lot of opportunity to create content and test different types of content quicker. And so experimenting with image creation, video creation. I know video is a piece that is so vital in shifting away from written content and trying to use video content in campaigns, social, programmatic, you know. Sometimes it's cost prohibitive and logistically prohibitive to produce video and shoot video content. Yeah. And, you know, AI is empowering creatives to create that type of content much more efficiently and effectively and test it out and keeping costs.
And that's happening at a time when social algorithms in particular want video content. So it's kind of forcing, like, in some ways you have, like, if you don't have the budget to actually invest in video, and video is the thing that gets a lot of attention with algorithms, then your hands are kind of, you kind of have to embrace it.
Right.
And so how this ties back to the content, you know, the idea of unhinged content, right, is that I think the AI slop that we're seeing now, where it's, you know, we can detect it. We're seeing people right. post things and they're like, ah, oh, Bob Dylan and Bruce Springsteen gave a high five in front of, you know, this pizza place or whatever, right?
Okay.
You see that it's garbage, right? Well, and then it's AI produced, right? So that's going to get better. It's going to get to a point where you're like, they may have actually done that in front of this pizza place, right? Because it's going to look so photorealistic. Right. But I think that the next iteration of AI slop is going to be thematic. I think you're going to start seeing themes reappear over and over. And I don't quite know what that looks like, but I think it's going to move away from like just being able to see, you know, that the skin is too shiny or something like that into there's just going to be elements of it that are that give us the clue.
Yeah, it'll be super formulaic. I mean, I think it'll emerge just kind of like the copywriting side of AI is. Like where they'll leave these trigger, these tells, which is funny because I wrote down in one of the things I was going to talk about was AI perceptions and people, the opposing of all signifiers of potentially AI generated content, like the M dash, you know, like people are just like patently saying, don't use M dashes anymore.
Ooh, motorcycle just went by.
It was loud. you know, writers are always going to use them. People are always going to use them. But you're reminding me of something I keep hearing and seeing, which is kind of the importance of, or people creating content, thinking kind of in the social space again, that intentionally is screwed up in certain ways. I don't know about intentionally, but it's just obvious that the hand of a human maker, it's almost like the idea of something being painterly, you know, like on a canvas where you can see the brush strokes, mm-hmm. like embedding things within your content so that it proves that it's human made.
And that was the point that I was ultimately wanting to drive at, which is, and I think this is more so for video and then just still images, but outsourcing the creativity to a computer. Again, I think that's where we're going to start seeing thematically these things show up. So you can do it, and it might be the most efficient thing for you, but if you're serious, you're going to need to employ other things. You're not going to see your top competitors outsourcing all of their ideas to AI.
No.
They're still going to, there's going to be a human hand in there that is really guiding the waves.
Yeah, totally agree. The tool, I keep saying this because I think it's true, that there will be nothing more powerful than a great marketer with really brilliant ideas who can use these tools well. Because at that point, you're only encumbered by, the only barrier are your ideas. Like, that's it, you know? Like, so it comes down to everything that's up here, and yep. your taste and your style and, you know, all of that, which makes a great marketer anyway. So
I'm going to take the last couple minutes to get to something that drove my purchase decision of an iPhone 17. Ooh. And that's so that my iPhone 13 Pro can be used as a bit of a burner account, because I do not want TikTok on my main phone. That is a super invasive app, and I don't want it on my main phone. But this leads to something I saw in Stacked Marketer. It says, according to UKOM, UKOM, 54% of UK uses TikTok each month, and 3% growth since March. Most of that growth comes from 45 to 54 age group, which has increased by 15%. Like Facebook, TikTok is attracting older users, which means it's an increasingly effective platform if you're targeting that audience. So the adoption of TikTok can't be ignored anymore, and it's also not just a Gen Z doom scroll kind of distraction, right?
Honestly,
it's a distraction for Gen X.
Huh? Did you know that?
You track their Gen A and Gen Z children.
they're on there trying to learn what skibbity toilet means.
That's right.
I'm still trying to figure that out. Somebody just explain it to me.
Like, I gotta get on this TikTok.
TikTok. Oh my goodness. So I think I'm gonna have to install TikTok, and again, it's gonna go on my totally wiped iPhone 13.
Your burner phone.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's a marketing channel that simply can't be ignored anymore.
I genuinely did not realize. I guess I haven't been paying close enough attention to those stats. I did not realize that. That's incredible to me.
You said 45 to 54?
Yep. That's the largest growing age group within TikTok right now.
Interesting. Okay.
But it's really growing pretty insane pace. So.
I'm not sure if that's the result of all of the media attention and the controversy around it. Is that actually, I got to check this thing out. And then they get, because it's so sticky that people become addicted. So,
Well, and it's funny that you bring that up, because another extension was just granted to TikTok. And I think as Americans, we all understand it's not going away. It's not something that they're going to be pulling that app. No. So it's something that we have to start bringing in as a tool into the marketing mix for all age groups.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. So that was a lot of trends. Wow. So many more. So I'm just going to speed run. No, I'm just kidding. All right. Thanks for joining Office Hours Live. If you want to chat about any of this, reach us at 4bmarketing.com. Love to talk about it, and subscribe to the 4B Marketing newsletter, and we'll let you know the next time we're doing this next month. So, all right. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks.
You've been listening to Send This to Your CEO, the B2B Tech Marketing Podcast. Tune in next time for more insights and strategies to stay ahead in B2B tech.